This is the Bat Pod. Bat Pod.
Grab your bat microphone. It's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate. It's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod. My name is Bill Beer, and joining us tonight, Jay Loving.
Good evening.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing quite well.
That's good. That's good. So tonight on the podcast, we have a pretty good show for you. We're going to do Batman number 97, Detective Comics 1026, and Classic Batman 252. We have a topic of the week, our top three gadgets in Batman's utility belt. And then we have a new segment called Ask the Bat Pod, where we answer your questions right on the Bat Pod. Let's go ahead and head to the books.
The Bat Pod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
We are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
Our first book tonight is Batman 97. Your writer is James Tynion IV. Artist, Jorge Jimenez. Colors, Tamu Mori. Letters, Clayton Cowles. Cover, March Mori. Variant cover, Francisco Matina. Associate editor, Dave Walgas. Editor, Ben Abernathy. In this issue, we see Punchline overseeing the arrival of chemicals for a new formula of the Joker toxin, and is informed that somebody is killing Joker thugs in the Narrows. In a flashback, we see Clown Hunter setting ablaze a Joker mobile with some Joker henchmen inside. Batman escapes the Monarch Theater while being taunted by the Joker and blindfolds himself to block out visions from the toxin still affecting him. Joker tells Punchline to kill his former flame, Harley Quinn. After collapsing, Harley Quinn takes Batman to her Eden to recover and flush the toxins out of his system by drinking a plant smoothie. And the issue ends with Batman seeing Alfred, who wants to have a talk. So, as we jump in this issue, we see Punchline right away, and she's told about the Clown Hunter, and I get a distinct feeling that she thinks the Joker is going to kill Batman, that is the ultimate goal, to kill Batman. Is that what you surmise there?
It's certainly possible. I didn't think it was outright clear, but I think, I think that's probably a pretty good analysis.
Yeah, that's her expectation, so it seems. The Clown Hunter, we see him again. He's pretty, he's like the Punisher, basically, punishing these goons that are dressed up as a Joker. And he sets this one on fire. It's like a Batmobile. Sets it on fire, and he looks like, as we said before, he looks like a teenager. You would think he would be stoppable, but I'm not so sure. What did you think? We got to see more of the Clown Hunter here. What did you think of him again?
I kind of think of him sort of as a, almost like a punk rock Joker. He's got the mohawk. He's definitely driven by what he's doing, and that is to kill all of the clown figures that are running all over the city, making havoc. And he's not afraid to kill anybody, as we saw,
You have to be curious what his backstory actually is.
Well, I'm wondering. There's none so far.
Right. You don't know anything about him, but I'm curious if there is, a trauma with the Joker or something like that, and this is his way of, fighting back. So when we see Batman again, he's fighting the Jokerized victims in the Monarch Theater. A Joker is there taunting him, telling these victims of mine, they're either upset at you because you didn't protect them, or they're upset at you because you haven't taken me out and you let them die, which I found very interesting.
Right.
Because that's been the ultimate thing with the Joker is Batman won't kill the Joker. Even if he kills a Robin, Batman won't cross that line.
Right.
The ultimate question in this issue is, do you think he's closer to crossing that line?
I don't know. That would seem pretty extreme for Batman. I think he may be closer, whether he'll actually do it or not. Because I've always seemed like, to me, it's like, I've always kind of felt that the Joker is, in some way, is trying to get Batman to kill him. If Batman kills the Joker, then ultimately the Joker wins, because he's made Batman cross that line that he never would, that incorruptible, you know, line.
And that makes perfect sense, because when Punchline meets up with the Joker, he's like, thinks this is hilarious, Batman getting away. Oh, I knew that was going to happen. He's going to be down for a little bit because of the toxin, but he'll be back. He'll be back, right. And it's like, why aren't we just killing him? But that's not what the Joker, but the Joker is getting so personal, you know, there in the theater by saying, you know, I'm offering all this money for these people to come, and I'm going to tell them how Batman was born. I'm going to tell them your secrets, and then I'm going to kill them.
Right.
So it's very personal, and we've said that before, but you really see how personal he's getting. I mean, I think you're right about that. He's really trying to push him over the edge to take him out this time for good.
But that makes sense, because if he's successful in his plan of letting everyone know Batman's origin in his story and his secret of who he is, that effectively puts Batman at an end. I mean, that ends what, you know, he can do.
Yeah.
So there would be no reason for it to continue. And Joker knows he's nothing without Batman. In other words, you know, Joker needs the Batman to be his antithesis, his opposite. And I think Batman needs the Joker, you know, that same thing. It's his antithesis. I think it's one of the reasons why he's never crossed the line, is that even though Joker continues to kill people, Batman lets him live, partly because I think of his, you know, vow not to kill. But we have seen him kill, not out directly, but letting people get killed. So he's not against, watching people get, you know, killed by their own devices.
Yeah, yeah. You effectively destroy Batman if you destroy his vow.
Right.
So, yeah. And one of my favorite scenes in this book, you know, Batman is seeing these visions of the different Jokers attacking him because he's still in this toxin.
Right.
And he decides to blindfold himself. It takes out the entire theater, basically blindfolded. I thought that was totally ninja-like, I guess you would say.
Yes.
But I enjoyed this issue. I enjoyed Harley Quinn's part in this issue.
Yes.
You know, the comic relief. I always thought that she was kind of annoying, you know. But in here, the way that she's being used, I really enjoy the way she's being used. And, you know, we're going to get the final confrontation of Harley Quinn and Punchline, I guess, next issue.
I hope so, which will be intriguing.
We get Harley Quinn takes Bruce to her Eden, her, you know, place hideaway that Poison Ivy has basically built to, I guess, between jobs or between whatever. Heal, and she has Bruce there, and she gives him this, you know, vegetable smoothie, whatever you want to call it, plant smoothie, and to flush out the toxins or whatnot. And he starts seeing visions and weird things again, but she says, after this, you'll be fine. So he keeps seeing people with their necks snapped. He keeps seeing, you know, this time it's Harley. We've seen Alfred several times. You've seen his parents with his neck snap, their neck snap. And we get to the final scene, and he sees Alfred, and he's like, I'm sorry, Master Bruce, but it's time we had a serious talk. I sort of think that maybe this is his subconscious.
I don't think so, obviously.
Yeah.
And the reason he's seeing everyone with their neck snap, it's sort of a manifestation of his post-traumatic stress over the death of Alfred.
Yeah,
he's absolutely. Obviously still grieving and still hasn't fully processed. And I don't know that he ever will to a full degree. So
exactly. And, you know, I think it's him trying to heal himself to be able to defeat the Joker. You know, it seems to be his focus. His focus is on his grief, and maybe this is a way that he's going. I don't know what if this is going to be much of the story or maybe a couple pages or whatnot, but we will have to see what happens. But because Batman's prepared for everything.
Right.
You know, if we go back to Grant Morrison's run, he was prepared for an attack, you know, with something that he put in his subconscious, or I don't know if I could explain that, but I liked it.
How did you like seeing Joker in a bathing suit and a pair of swim trunks?
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yes, very different type of Joker.
Semi-interesting, let's say.
Yes.
So, yeah, he's taking advantage of Bruce's money, and as always, you know, the cover is pretty, you know, terrifying, and we get Gilliam March on the cover, which he has done some issues of Batman, you know, in this run, and I like the cover. Of course, it doesn't have too much to do with what's on the inside, but I like that we have a consistent art team here in at least the last few issues. We've had this consistent art on this.
Right.
So that has been enjoyable. So, okay. We'll go ahead and head to our topic of the week.
The Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move up.
Welcome to Topic of the Week. And our topic this week is our top three gadgets in Batman's utility belt. Batman, of course, has a lot of things in his utility belt, and we're going to go over our top three. So, Jay, you get to go first.
All right. Number three is the grappling hook.
Yes.
Which he uses just about every issue. I mean, that's how he gets from building to building and swings around. It has saved himself, his neck, and others countless times. So, yeah, the pneumatic grappling hook is my number three.
Very good. So my number three, and I'm going, this is going to be out there a little bit, but I listed these as importance. And, you know, my number three is the kryptonite ring. You know, in case Superman ever goes rogue, you got to carry that kryptonite ring all the time to take him out. And we've seen this in comic stories, you know. We saw when Superman first gave Batman the kryptonite ring. And then there's Batman that has his own little storage of kryptonite. He actually has things to take out all the Justice Leaguers, but Superman being more powerful than anybody else on the planet, basically, I think the kryptonite ring is pretty important.
That's out there, but it crossed my mind.
Uh-huh.
It's too far out there, but
yeah. So what is your number two?
My number two is the shark repellent bat spray.
Ah.
We saw it in Batman 66 movie, and he used it in an episode of the TV show when he and Joker were having their surfing contests.
Yes.
So I'm kind of going goofy here. So.
And believe it or not, we've come across where Batman has met up with sharks. We had an old issue last time with sharks. So right. Batman kind of battles sharks more often than not. I think for that very reason, because of the shark, so they can put the shark repellent. It's been a few times. I mean, it hasn't been a ton of times, but
no, a couple. Two that I know of.
Yes. So my number two is what you had said before, the bat grappling gun or bat line or bat rope. You know, in the old days, it used to be like a batarang with a rope attached to it.
Right.
That we would throw. But then, you know, the Batman movie came out, Tim Burton, and it was actually a gun. And that was actually the first time there was a handheld grappling gun. And they actually brought that into the comics. It was actually, we saw that with Frank Miller.
Right.
Dark Knight Returns, he had like a rifle that was a grappling gun. And then in the comics, Norm Breithogel introduced that into Batman 458 in 91. And it's been in the animated series since, comics, films, even video games. So that is my number two top gadget.
Yeah, in the early days of the Golden Age, early Batman, they referred to it as, called it his silken rope that he had.
Oh, right, right.
And you're right. He would have the Batarang on the end, the large bat.
But he would carry it like he had all this rope. And then they had these little capsule-like, you know, utility belt. It wasn't like the pouches that you see today.
Right.
So, okay. What was your number one?
I'm not sure exactly how to describe this, but it's the little bat throwing objects that he has. Sort of like ninja throwing stars, but they're shaped like bats.
Just like batarangs, right?
Yeah, small batarangs, but you know, they're not the full size batarang, but they're small, and he, you know, has a handful of them and he flings them at whoever he's aiming at. He did it in this Detective Comics issue that we're just read.
Yes, yes.
Get some of those. So
Yeah, my number one was batarangs also. And, you know, he used them as weapons. He used them as, you know, disarming people. The size, you almost would think they would have to be, like, foldable or something to carry them in his utility belt. But, yeah, he can do different things. They can have explosive batarangs. He can have remote-controlled batarangs, you know. Batarangs that's a little bomb that he has a little remote with. So, yeah. I think that's one of his most important. He has to be able to swing from places. He has to be able to disarm people, that sort of thing. I think in the latest The Dark Knight series of movies, you actually see the batarangs used more than some of the other movies. You know, these are like, you know, he throws one to take out a light or something. It's not exactly in the comics. I don't know how you could portray that into live action.
Right.
So yeah, that's our top three gadgets in Batman's utility belt. So let's go ahead and head to our next book.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol, I can be incorruptible. I can be everlasting.
What symbol?
Something elemental, something terrifying.
Our next book is Detective Comics 1026. Peter J. Tomasi, story and words. Kenneth Rocafort, artist. Daniel Brown, colorist. Kenneth Rocafort, main cover. Lee Bermejo, variant cover. Dave Waglots, associate editor. Paul Kaninsky, editor. In this issue, two armored car security guards are kidnapped and taken into the city sewer. Batman follows them down, finds a group of hideously mutated people led by Killer Croc. Croc tells Batman that the mutations are the result of a toxic sludge released into the sewer by Joker and his henchmen. Croc then tells Batman his scheme to carve out his own territory during this Joker war. The army of mutants begins to attack Batman, but he dives into the sludge, escaping the... Croc tells him to cease fire, and then makes a deal with Batman that if Batman can defeat him one-on-one, he'll let his whole gang be taken into custody. Of course, Bats prevails, and he takes the gang in with the promise to reverse the mutations if possible. The main word that I would come to think to describe this issue for me was a little bit indifferent. I didn't think it was a bad issue. I didn't think it was a particularly great issue. It was what it was. And I'm not real sure if this is going to continue on. There's a indication that there's going to be a second part to this or an additional part to this, but it's not real clear. So I'm not exactly sure kind of what Tomasi was doing with this issue.
No, and, you know, on the cover it has Joker War Collateral Damage, and it really doesn't have much to do with Joker War. It's sort of has, it's Killer Croc's story. It's like almost like a fill-in issue while the Joker War is going on. And there were some interesting aspects, but as I said, it wasn't anything mind-blowing. And it seems like it's going to be continued, you know, at some other point or that sort of thing. But I'm not entirely sure. I don't get Croc's reasoning because he's sort of, you know, over the years kind of become sort of he's been less of a villain, let's put it that way, because, you know, he had his own little group of people down in the sewers previously. Here, he's like mutating them on purpose to create a monster, his own monster town or whatever you want to call it, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me personally. But, and then he's trying to save them from the Joker. You know, I don't know what the mutated them. I don't know what that going on with that exactly.
No, I mean, it's left kind of obscure as to exactly what happened with that. And yeah, I mean, Croc had actually, well, Batman says at one point, I thought you had turned over a new leaf. You know, what are you doing back here in the sewers? And there was a little editor's note that, you know, he had become, I think, a manager of a hotel, which is odd. I don't remember reading that in any of the books.
Yeah, it was in Gotham City. It was in that book. It was like a 6-issue mini. And, of course, I can't think of it off the top of my head.
I didn't read it. I know. I would have remembered.
Yeah, I picked up a couple issues, but it was just like villains, you know, it was all about villains. Gotham City, I can't remember, of course, doing this live.
Right. I guess it doesn't matter. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, Croc had kind of turned over a new leaf, and the events of this Joker War turned him back. And, you know, you noticed, you made a mention of something on the masthead of this issue. It says Joker War Collateral Damage. And I've noticed on the Nightwing books and Batgirl, it has that same masthead, you know, Joker War Collateral Damage. So I'm thinking that all these tie-in issues are going to be away from the main story and side stories like this. Whereas, you know, this has nothing to do with the main Joker War that's going on in Batman proper. It's just sort of a little side story. And I think most of the tie-in issues are going to be that way, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, you can read Joker War by itself, or you can read these, but you don't have to read them to understand the story. I think that's how they're going with this.
No.
And that mini-series I was talking about is Gotham City Monsters.
Okay.
It came out last year, but I didn't read it. But
nor did I.
Apparently, he was in a suit and tie and running a hotel, which is different.
Yes.
But if you think about Croc's, you know, origins, you know, he had like a suit and a hat. He was like a mobster at the beginning.
Yes.
He wasn't so mutated. So here at the end here, they're at Arkham Asylum, and Batman looks like he's in control of wherever he has him. Is this his secret bat cave in Arkham or something? Or
I don't know. Wasn't clear on that. It didn't show anything that indicated that it was the regular bat cave, but it wasn't just regular cells either. I mean, they were, you know, all of them self-contained, and there was just the 6 or 7 of them. I can't remember how many.
Yeah, and I know, you know, he redid, you know, Gotham City PD and their cells there. So maybe he did something to Arkham when he, you know, reimaged the city to his liking or that sort of thing.
Right. I mean, I took this to be that it's some either an auxiliary bat cave or some ancillary place that he has. Not exactly Arkham, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, in next issue, of course, we get the oversized 1027. 1,000 issue anniversary, so
right,
that should be a big issue with different stories. I don't even know if there might be one story that's in current continuity, but more likely it's just going to be stories from different creators and that sort of thing. So
that's what I'm anticipating based on past experiences.
Right.
It's what they do with all these milestone issues. They tend to just be collections of other stories.
Okay. Let's go ahead and head to Ask the Batpod.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Okay, welcome to a new segment that we're going to call Ask the Batpod. I went to Twitter this week and I asked for listeners to ask us questions and then we would answer them just for fun. We actually got an overwhelming response. I was thinking maybe two or three questions. We actually got about 15, which I'm going to do my best to spread those out between a couple episodes. Are you ready, Jay, to answer these questions?
I'm ready.
Did you see the questions? Are you prepared?
I saw some of them, okay. Yes, but not all of them.
Okay. So our first question comes from the Tim Drake podcast, a.k.a. Rob Myers. It says, have been saying this since 2009 when Damian came in the DCU. Should he just have become his own thing and just let Tim stay Robin? Now, 10 years later, this is actually happening. Would you just rather had this, what happened, transpired over the 10 years, or him, Tim, remain Robin? So, what are your initial thoughts? Because it seems they're transpiring to, for Damian not to be Robin anymore.
For me, Damian absolutely had to become Robin. If you read the last few, you know, the last story arc of Detective Comics before the New 52, the Black Glove, you know, that was the time where Bruce Wayne was killed. One of the times Bruce Wayne was killed. Nightwing, Dick Grayson became Batman and Damian was his Robin. And they fit together perfectly as two characters. I don't think Tim would have fit well with Dick as Batman because you had, you know, Damian, who was still very, you know, under the influence of his training as the League of Shadows, the League of Assassins.
Yep.
Still wanted to do a lot of his own thing, and Dick had to rein him in. I don't think Batman, Bruce Wayne as Batman, could have done that as effectively. Like I said, those two together were perfect a pairing. One of the most enjoyable series of stories, in my opinion.
Yes. I mean, we wouldn't have got the story if he didn't become Robin. You know, right. I really enjoyed the way that he was introduced, the way that Grant Morrison, you know, told that story. And, I mean, he did the Batman and Robin story, as you were saying. So, yeah, I do really like Tim Drake as Robin, but I think you had to have Damian as Robin. And, I mean, you either love Damian or you don't. I don't think it's anywhere in between.
Yeah, that's been my experience. I mean, people either really like him or they just detest him, think he's just a complete brat.
Right, right.
You know.
So we'll head to our next question, and we got Nick Wetmore. I know during Tom King's Bat Run, the Bat Crew went to a Batman-themed fast food burger joint. Very ha-ha meh. But I need the experts to tell me, what would the Bat Crew order at Taco Bell?
I don't know. The Bat Crew, Batman would probably order just plain tacos. Yeah, cause he's very, you know, wouldn't want to get anything too fancy. So Bruce Wayne, Batman would order just tacos, the regular crunchy tacos.
Yeah, could he, you know, could he use a knife and fork with those? Because
he'd probably try, but I don't know if he could or not.
Yeah. Everybody else, I don't have a... Damian seems like he would have something a little spicy.
Yeah, it's one of those gorditas or something like that.
Yeah.
The rest of the Bat Crew, gosh, who knows?
Nachos.
Tim was always kind of health conscious, so he would have gotten something
salad.
Healthy. Something, yeah, well, like a taco salad. Something healthy on the menu.
Right.
Batgirl, Barbara, gosh, I don't know. Maybe a bean burrito.
There you go. Get some of that fiber. So, yeah. Okay, thank you for that question. Okay, our next question is by Green Lantern HG. Why doesn't the Batpod do more Green Lantern? And I'll take this one.
Okay.
If the writers of Batman would put Green Lantern in the Batman books, we would talk about Green Lantern. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened as long as we've been doing it. But we definitely would talk about him.
Yes. Yeah, my answer would have been probably more snarky. So I'm like, this is not the, it's not called the Green Lantern pod. It's called the Batpod. But you're right. I mean, you know, we basically talk about the two main books, Detective and Batman. And there's, if Green Lantern or any other hero of the DC universe appeared in it, we would talk about them. But,
yes,
you know, that's not what we're about.
So contact those DC editors and say, I want Green Lantern in my Bat books. We will talk about them.
If
Thanks.
You can find any DC editors, I thought they all got laid off
yeah,
here recently.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know if there's any left. So thanks, Green Lantern HG. Okay, our next question comes from Sean, Secret Wars and Beyond podcast. When Tim Drake takes on the mantle of Robin once again, because he is the best Robin, what should Damian's code name be? Interesting.
As far as him being the best Robin, that's strictly a matter of opinion. I mean, I'm tempted to think that Dick was probably the best Robin, and Damian was number two in my book. That's just personal opinion.
Yep. But if Damian was going to get a code name, I think I would call him, and this is for Martin Ferretti, the Raish. That would be his code name.
That's not what I would call him. That's not, no.
So, yeah. Okay. We'll head on to our next question. This is comes from Kevin Lertz. What happened to Batman's capsule-style utility belt, the yellow one? Seems like a cool design. Saw a drawing from an old comic that told you what was inside each one. It shows how well-trained and disciplined he is because he can remember what's in each identical cylinder.
I don't know.
I mean, I remember the Batman cylinder, and I kind of vaguely remember that issue where it says what he has in that utility belt. It was like a special or secret files or something like that. But I guess they've gone more modern. But I do have to say, if you like Batman's, you know, capsule utility belt, you should read the first issue of The Three Jokers. It may appear.
Which I have not read yet. Yeah. I don't know. The capsule utility belt looks sleek and it's very high tech, but I personally just like the pouch. You can get more stuff in there.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It's like I don't know what you could, you know, be hard to get a Batarang in those little capsules.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure they changed that for convenience sake. And, you know, once they started with the movies and that sort of thing, comic creators sort of, you know, changed looks and things based on movies and that sort of thing. You see that for Marvel and DC, so.
Right.
But thanks for the question. Our next question comes from Bob Roland. Why is the polka dot man in a major motion picture before Penny Plunderer in the Eraser? And I cannot answer that question.
Polka dot man.
Did you see the trailer for Suicide Squad?
No, I have not.
That's our next question. He's going to be a villain in the Suicide Squad.
I couldn't tell you that. I don't know. I mean, that just, you'd have to ask the producers of the film.
Yeah, I don't know. Any of those would be pretty ridiculous because the Eraser dressed up like a pencil. So,
yes.
Pretty ridiculous. So,
Martin would like it, though.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Our next question is from DC Now podcast, Rob Lewis. Did you watch DC Fandom, and what were the highlights for you? So, did you watch last weekend the DC Fandom at all, or?
I watched some of it, not a whole lot, but I did see a few things.
Yeah. I watched some of it also, the things that I was interested in. There wasn't a lot of comic news. We do have, you know, the news about a Batman mini, you know, with the Fox family and one of the Foxes becoming the new Batman, which I know at one point they said that was going to be a change. Batman was going to be a black Batman in this right. 5G or whatever, but that didn't seem to happen. So we get a mini from that. But Not a lot of comic news. I did watch the trailer and for the Batman, but I'll be honest, I'm not lately. I haven't been a big trailer guy. I want to see these movies without, you know, going in sort of blind and not knowing like every detail what's going to happen and that sort of thing.
I understand that thinking, but also the trailers also seem to be deliberately misleading. I think about the trailers I saw for Justice League before I saw the movie, and they threw a lot of curves in there of misdirections. And I think they're doing that, you know, deliberately to try to not telegraph too much what the movie's going to be like.
You can't tell much what it's going to be like from the little teaser.
No. I mean, I just loved... Well, the highlights for me were the sizzle reel for the Snyder cut of Justice League. I thought that was really excellent, and I'm really stoked to see that next year.
Yeah, did you notice what villain showed up in that little piece? I don't know if you caught it or not, but it was Desaad.
I don't remember seeing that. No.
Three-fourths of the way through, there's a guy in a hood.
Oh, I missed that.
So, yeah.
And the Batman trailer, I loved. I just absolutely loved it.
No, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I got chills.
We're finally getting to see Batman, I think, true detective, which we haven't seen him that way in the films.
Mm-hmm.
He's mostly the guy who just, you know, beats people to a pulp and chases around after criminals. But as far as actual showing his detective skills, we haven't really seen that in the movies. And I think we're going to see that in this film. And I like the costume, what I saw of it. I know that they're kind of sort of on hiatus of filming right now with all the COVID.
Yeah, it sounds like they only film like a quarter of it, which is nothing.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the actual film is going to be far different from the trailer, but the trailer was enough to really get me excited about it.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then I saw the Suicide Squad. It wasn't really a trailer, but it showed you what actors was playing some of the villains.
Right.
It seems interesting.
I see that one.
Yeah. And the Wonder Woman.
Yeah. I like the Wonder Woman 84 trailer as well.
Yeah.
So.
I did watch Shazam. You know, they had the actors from the Shazam get together, but that wasn't very long. And talking about Shazam, you know, they had a little teaser with The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, you know, in his Black Adam movie coming out. But yeah, what I saw, it was entertaining, but there wasn't a lot of comic news at all. You know, DC making all these changes. I was looking forward to some comic news about something because all we've had is layoffs and cutbacks.
Yes.
And we don't really know anything.
And, yeah, it would have been nice to get that, but I'm not one bit surprised they didn't say anything about that.
No.
Jim Lee is famous for just for towing the company line, I think.
Yep. So we have a few more questions here, and this is from C.J. Harrison. Do you think people read too much into Tim and Connor's friendship? Also, do you feel it's fine for Bruce and Selina to be married again? Everyone at D.C. knows they should be married, but they aren't.
I don't have an issue at all with Bruce and Selina being married.
No, I don't really have an issue. I think it's story-based why they aren't. I mean, they kind of teased you there a little bit, but I don't think it's... I think it'll be totally story-based if they do. I don't think they're going to just do it to do it.
Right.
But as far as the Tim and Connor relationship goes, I don't know too much about that.
Nor do I.
Yeah, it hasn't come into the Batman books too much, so I really can't answer that one.
No, same.
Okay, our next question is from Nick Wetmore again. What was the Batman-centric story you've read the most?
As far as rereading?
Well, yeah, I guess. What was the Batman-centric story or Batman story that you've read the most?
Gosh, the one that I've reread the most would probably be The Black Glove.
Mine would be Nightfall, probably.
That's a good one. I read that a couple times, but I haven't reread. I need to reread that again. It's been a few years, but so yeah. Black Glove for me, definitely. It's one of my favorite stories of all time. Like I say, I could easily have Dick Grayson as Batman permanently. If they ever decided to permanently do away with Bruce Wayne, I wouldn't mind Dick being Batman all.
I would enjoy that. That would be, I would like that. It would be a different kind of Batman, but, you know.
Yeah, I would.
That Batman and Robin series, it was very good. It was excellent, actually.
So.
Okay. Our last question is Nick Wetmore again. And he says, I understand we aren't going to get DC Marvel crossovers anymore, but which two heroes and two villains that haven't been used before would you put together? So I guess a DC villain and a Marvel villain. And So I'll start off. The heroes I'd like to see put together, and I don't know if they've ever been together. They might have, but is the Punisher and Batman. I think that would be kind of interesting because, you know, Batman with his code not to kill and the Punisher, that's all he does is kill.
Interesting.
Kind of interesting to me, personally.
For me, I would put Batman and Iron Man together because they seem to be very similar. I mean,
yes.
Neither one of them, they're both billionaires. Neither of them have superpowers. It's all based on their technology and training. So, yeah, I would like to see those. I think you could get a lot of conflict as far as them butting heads, as far as opinions. So.
And Batman has, you know, Iron Man-like suits, you know, he's worn before. So, yes, they are similar, that's for sure. So, villains. It's a hard one because I'm not super familiar with a ton of villains in Marvel.
Yeah, I'm not either. I'm trying to think of,
I'm just going to say.
Dr. Doom, maybe, would be one of them. I would be interested if he could cross over to.
But could he get along with anybody? You know, let's say Dr. Doom and Lex Luthor.
Oh, man, Lex Luthor.
Yeah, that would be tough.
That would be difficult, yeah. I agree.
Or I was thinking Red Skull and the Joker. Red Skull.
Who we really need to answer this question would be Ronnie Barron or Dennis Chandler, who know much more about Marvel universe than I do.
Yep, and I'm sure they're watching right now.
Oh, yeah, of course they are.
Okay. I thank everybody that submitted questions. We really appreciate it. Hope we answered them, if not the way you wanted or your opinion, that it was interesting. So let's go ahead and head to our final book.
Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
Our last book tonight, Batman number 252 of October 1973. Story, Frank Robbins. Art, Irv Novak, and Dick Giordano. Editor, Julie Schwartz. And in this issue, the spook has been captured, and Batman and Commissioner Gordon are still confused as to how it's possible that Val Caliban, a criminal that was killed in the electric chair 10 years ago, is operating as the spook. They're informed that the spook has escaped, and they also learn the reason why the spook is escaping from Gotham's maximum security prison is because he helped build the place. Batman goes to the graveyard where Val Caliban is supposed to be buried, but as he opens up the coffin, he finds nothing but a spook dummy inside. And at that moment, the spook attacks Batman from behind and knocks him in the coffin and buries him alive. Alfred arrives at the graveyard and starts digging him up. We see Batman as none other than Jason Bard in disguise. The whole charade was part of Batman's plan to make Caliban believe that he had defeated Batman. Meanwhile, the real Batman follows the spook to the secret hideout in an abandoned prison. Batman finds a room where there's an electric chair and decides to recreate Caliban's execution to learn how he managed to survive. The spook arrives and captures Batman in the chair. In his last minute, Batman deduces that Caliban must have tricked someone to die instead of him. Caliban activates the chair to prevent Batman from spreading the truth. Caliban believes he killed Batman and frees the body from the electric chair. At that moment, Batman attacks and reveals to Caliban that he insulated his cow with a ceramic skull cap. As Batman defeats the spook, he finds some blueprints of an escape-proof cell, preventing the spook from escaping again. So, when I first, you know, see this issue, my only other experience with the spook is, you know, Damian off the spook, you know, in that first arc of Grant Morrison. I believe he cut off his head. But what's your experience with the spook?
About the same as that.
Yeah.
Just about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't really read anything much more about him.
So this was kind of interesting. I did enjoy this one. I like, you know, Batman being in Commissioner Gordon's office and them trying to solve and, you know, using his skills to detect what's really going on here. Jason Bard shows up, and Jason Bard's been a character in Batman for a while, off and on. Sometimes there's great stretches where he's not, you know, around. So I did enjoy this issue. I like the art. He fights a dog. He punches a dog in the face.
Yes.
Kind of interesting.
Well, I've been told if you are attacked by a dog, hit him in the nose, if that's their most sensitive spot.
So. Oh, right. I guess they're showing that a little bit there.
Yes.
But yeah, and then he sits down in the electric chair, which I don't know if I'd sit in an electric chair.
I wouldn't. You wouldn't catch me doing it.
No. Yeah, and what I don't understand, okay, this guy is working with an architect or engineer or whatever. They're designing this prison, and he's making the designs where there's an escape route. And he's a criminal that doesn't have a history. So he kills his boss so he doesn't see, so his secret is safe. But why does he need an escape route if he never kills his boss? Does he really need an escape route?
Yeah, that's was kind of never really addressed or answered. Yeah. You had to kind of take it on faith.
This is actually the issue right after we did the last issue I did in 251 with the Joker.
Right.
A different writer, of course. I enjoyed it for what it was. I wanted to revisit the spook. You know, he's not a villain that I think, oh, we need to see more spook or anything like that, because, you know, he's not. There's no anything supernatural to him, which reading this at the beginning, maybe you thought that right. was the case. But
yeah, I like him as a character when he shows up, but it's not. I'm the same way. I'm not. Would never sit here and say, oh, this is an underutilized villain that they need more of.
Right.
I wouldn't say that.
So. Right. I do really enjoy, you know, the symbol on the cover, Batman in the, like, TV series symbol.
Yes.
I like the Batman that's separate. I do like that because that's on a lot of issues that I really enjoy that. So, yeah. Any final thoughts about this particular one?
No. It was a very good book.
There is a second story. I didn't get into that much, so.
I read it. I enjoyed it as well. That's the great thing about these old issues from the 70s up until the late 70s, but they would always do one or usually two stories, the main story and a backup story.
Yeah.
And really got a lot for your money.
Cover
price on this thing was 20 cents.
20 cents.
And you got two
stories.
Pretty good stories.
And they're pretty dense in comparison to what we get today. Sometimes these are pretty, especially that Robin story. The final page is pretty dense. And you get to see the Robin cycle, or whatever you want to call that.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, that's her show for tonight. We'll go ahead and get out of here. If you'd like to leave feedback for the Batpod, our email is batpodpodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are @bat_pod. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/thebatpod. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving us a review. We'd really appreciate it. A big thank you to everybody that has retweeted our show on Twitter and Facebook. So we had more Joker this time. I think I like the pacing of this particular issue. I think, you know, nowadays that You know, they have some issues that are slow. If you read them in conjunction, you read better than maybe some of the single issues.
I agree, and I think what they're doing, well, I'm pretty sure what they're doing is that more and more they're writing for the trade paperback collection and not for the single issues. And I think it really becomes apparent when we do like the stuff we've been doing, reading some of the old issues from the Bronze Age and Silver Age, when they didn't have trade paperback collections, and you'd see you'd get a whole complete story in one issue or one or two issues, and you didn't feel like that they were dragging, you know, things out to fill space for a trade paperback. It's really become apparent to me as we've been reading a lot of these older issues.
Right. You could definitely, you know, especially when you get a story that's in like six or seven parts, and it feels like some issues, not a lot happened in this issue, but reading it all together, it kind of makes sense. So Joker War is rolling. We're going to get Harley Quinn next issue up against, you know, Punchline. And did you know that Punchline's origin has already been published? Did you happen to get Joker 80th Anniversary Special?
I did. I have not read it yet.
Supposedly, I haven't read it yet either. Supposedly, her origin is a story in that book.
Okay.
Where she meets the Joker for the first time.
I have to go back and find that, because I'd like to know that. She's an interesting character.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Not as exciting, not as intriguing as Harley. Because Harley's got that goofy personality.
Right. She's all serious and everything. So.
Punchline is just straight seriousness. Yeah, just all down, right down to business.
Yep. Until next time, same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.